guys, welcome to the second episode of Lex Rated, the Patreon exclusive podcast series where I rant, rave, and chop it up about topics in race, class, and or sex work. In this episode, we'll be talking about topics in the world of stripping. This isn't a breakdown of the general history of stripping, but for that, be sure to watch the Lex Rated Minisode, A Short History of Stripping, which is on the Patreon page. Instead, we'll be addressing colorism and racism behind the fun and multifaceted world of towering heels, pussy poppin', and fantasy. We'll also be discussing ways that technology has empowered strippers despite these issues. First, I want to address stripping on the sex work hierarchy because I want you to keep it in mind for the rest of the episode. Stripping is perhaps one of the most accepted forms of sexual labor. While strippers are routinely stigmatized by broader society, as a cam girl and OnlyFans babe, I have encountered many men who claim they draw the line at camming, stripping, or premium snaps, saying that anything more is too much, dragging full-service sex workers, sugar babies, and porn stars in the process. We've all encountered the redeemable stripper narrative in film and TV, most notable for me being Diamond in the Players Club, who only stripped to secure a bag to graduate from college and move on to a more reputable career. And she was juxtaposed to some really, like, nasty girls, so she was, like, supposed to be, you know, the good stripper. And the stripping college girl is a more seen narrative than the full-service sex worker on the road to redemption. Then there are celebrities that bite stripper culture, like Nicki Minaj, who endorse strippers but drag other types of sex workers in the process. And there are even strippers who cringe at the label of sex worker, wishing to separate themselves from the women they see as lower tier. "I don't sell my pussy," they claim. So as far as the hierarchy goes, or the totem pole of respectability informed by how close a sex worker gets to her clients or types of services performed, strippers are pretty high up. Now, let's talk about colorism and racism in the industry. This year, I turned 25 years old, guys. And yes, I felt old, like I felt over the hill. And I don't feel like that anymore. I feel fine. But like, it was a gut reaction when I first turned 25. And I didn't do too much by my standards. While I would have loved to hop on an economy flight to Bali to spend a week in a 100 per night home, drinking fresh fruit juices and eating lots of noodles by the beach, I instead was at home in Atlanta anticipating the arrival of my adorable, have you seen him yet on my timeline, puppy, Butters, in a few weeks. And I was getting work done and making arrangements for obscene amounts of red velvet cake. You know me. My friend Marnisha, who was about to graduate from Duke Law School, shout out to you, girl. Yes, about to graduate from Duke and be a lawyer. Yes, my bad bitch from Detroit. Sorry, y'all, like I lost track for a second. But she came to visit me and we went out for drinks and a turn up before making a trip to a popping strip club near my house that I never had the time or appropriate budget to go to. And, you know, I love the strip club, okay? And I never go unless I'm willing to spend some money on the women because I hate the idea of peeping for free. So we go and it's totally satisfactory as far as strip clubs go. Way better, in my opinion, than the strip clubs of Las Vegas. The bulk of my strip club experience, where all the girls seem to be rail thin with gigantic, barely jiggling breasts. And this isn't like a body drag. This is just like a, this isn't like, that's not my preference. Like, they do not have clubs where there are thicker women. So, like, if you go to a club in Las Vegas, you're going to see pretty much, like, one type of woman. But at the club near my house, the women looked natural, happy, gorgeous, and fun. It reminded me of the strip clubs in Miami with great music and food, except with less Brazilian butt lifts and ass shots. Y'all know I was in there throwing my own ass along with the women, sipping on tequila sunrises and desperately craving my own set on stage so I could really let loose. Like, I was that, like, I was throwed. And I was having a lot of fun. And I was just, and there were girls in there sitting there looking mean as hell. Like, girls who had came with their friend. You know, like, yes, girl, I'll go with you. But they were sitting there looking mad as hell. But I was in there just like, you know, mesmerized, having fun. I spied a woman who was strikingly pretty. And she had like an hourglass frame, long hair, dark skin, and she had this gorgeous smile. And she was mesmerizing, as good strippers tend to be. And I showered her with ones and told her to come find me when her set was done. And she obliged, and I solicited a lap dance. And, like, I love getting lap dances. And if you go to the strip club, you know, if you're a woman who goes to the strip club, and you're a fun and generous woman in the strip club, dancers tend to be more open with you than they are with men. So they'll like let you touch them a little bit more. Like, not, I'm not saying all of them, but a lot more of them tend to be friendly. And they, like, she was like letting me touch her all over. Like, she was putting my hands on her, and like she stayed quite long, and we were giggling and we were talking. I was having a good time, and I asked her if the club was hiring. Fully drunk and half serious, but like, I've long harbored a fantasy of trying out stripping. And she asked me if I had a permit, which Atlanta requires dancers to register for. And keep in mind, like, the next weekend was Super Bowl weekend, so I'm pretty sure other girls have been asking her, because people, like, girls come from all over to come to Atlanta already to strip, but specifically for that next weekend to come for Super Bowl weekend, they were going to be out there. And so she was like, do I have a permit? And I was like, no. And she laughed. Good, she said, because I'll make less money with another light-skinned girl in here. Whatever smile was on my face melted off, because her words were immediately troubling to me. You're gorgeous, though, I replied, like I was trying to keep up the mood or whatever. And, you know, she was gorgeous, but she said nothing and she kept on dancing. I tipped her more, thanked her, and I went to go find my friend to go home. So my experience with old girl really had me thinking. While I had been wondering if the club would even be lucrative for me because of my robust thickness, like, I legit only saw one girl in there with breasts my size, you know, because big boobs like this, they don't sit up like, you know, them little apricot titties, the way they just sit up, facing upward. So, you know, and I don't be knowing if that is strip club ready, you know, my type of titties. And I only saw one girl in there like that. So that's what I was thinking of. But while I was thinking of that, she was sizing me up as competition because of my complexion. And I just knew this was something I wanted to explore for the podcast as a result. Siobhan Brooks, spelled S-I-O-B-H-A-N, even though, you know, I'll have a list of sources below this, is a former dancer at the famously union-organized peep show bar, The Lusty Lady, in the 90s, and she's a sociologist. She noted many instances of racism at the progressive establishment, writing, "Within the first month, I felt there was a major problem in the feminist equation of The Lusty Lady. Out of 70 dancers, only 10 were women of color, and of these, only 3 were black. The black dancers were rarely allowed to work the lucrative private pleasures booth." Siobhan wrote that someone explained it to her thusly: "Because white men would pay 25 cents to see us on stage, as opposed to the $5 required in the private pleasures booth, having black women dance in the booth would lead to the club losing money." Her experiences led to her studying racism and colorism in stripping, and the fruits of her labor was a fascinating book called Unequal Desires, Race and Erotic Capital in the Stripping Industry. Upon studying 3 strip clubs, Brooks made a number of discoveries and declared that the hypersexual reputation of black women hinders rather than helps their success in the stripping world. She found that, quote, "the view of black women as gold diggers also results in customers wanting to bargain down the prices of lap dances given by black women." She observed the experiences of black women in predominantly white strip clubs, noting that they encountered racism and had to play down their blackness for more customers. Lighter-skinned black women in these establishments often claimed to be biracial, finding that their customers wanted black girls who weren't actually black. When one girl mentioned she could pretend to be multiple races because of her ambiguous features, citing them as assets, Brooks astutely noted, "customers can imagine her to be the race of their choice and can even ignore that she is Latina and just see her as a white blonde woman." Another girl said, "I learned to be whatever they want me to be because they are there for a fantasy. I remember I used to actually tell them that I am black, Native American, and Scottish, and they would get turned off because that's not what they saw me as. They saw me as Latina or black. So I learned to ask them what I look like to them, and based on what they said, I would tell them that is my racial identity." The ability to be racially ambiguous is something Brooks refers to as erotic capital, and is especially valuable in majority white clubs where the clientele tend to be passively racist, actively racist, or at the very least, bathed in ideals of white supremacy. At these locations, body type also plays a role in being hired and making good money. Thicker bodies are associated with low class, ghetto-ness, and being sloppy. So when you go to predominantly white strip clubs and see the token black girls, they are not like the majority of the black girls you'll find at a black strip club. And therefore, maybe you're thinking, well, that's why black women should work at black strip clubs. Brooks noted that many of the women preferred working in white clubs for reasons ranging from quality of clientele, security, and status. She wrote, "Women of color working in clubs predominantly employing people of color may make good money, but are subject to unjust working conditions, customer expectations that services will be cheaper, and unsafe neighborhood spaces. Erotic capital is not separate from institutions or other forms of capital." But also, black women at black clubs run into demands for Latinas or exotic-looking black women. You may recall the short-lived New York City stripper strike of 2017 and 18, in which a number of strippers at clubs with predominantly black clientele not only rebuked star tenders, you know, those bartender girls who wear like the super skimpy outfits and they, you know, they pour their drinks and they dance and sometimes they get rained on, they get tips and all of that. But, you know, the New York City strippers rebuked them for infringing on their territory by wearing the skimpy clothes, dancing for dollars, and receiving headliner treatment. But they also rebuked the clubs that frequently don't include black women in their ranks. The movement was started by Bronx native and dancer Giselle Marie, who in 2018 said, "What we're trying to do is address the fact that black women aren't allowed to work in upscale clubs, so that can be one of the reasons why they're enduring all the issues in the urban clubs. In certain upscale clubs, there will be like 150 dancers, and less than 10 of them will be black women. Some of the clubs have just 1, 2, or 3 black dancers." And that was definitely my own experience in the strip clubs in Las Vegas. There were very few black women, and like they were just white women in there. And when I come down south, the strip clubs down here tend to be black, reflecting the local populations and such. But they also have Spanish girls, and I have seen a few with white girls, like I guess for the diversity factor. So let's back that up real quick and examine the ways class and race intersect to inform experience. Barring economically privileged women who work in strip clubs for personal fulfillment, many women who turn to stripping in the first place are economically disadvantaged, making the issues of the profession gender and class-based. The most upper-class strip clubs with the best clientele that are white hire few black women. And meanwhile, the upper-class black strip clubs tend to hire light-skinned, racially ambiguous, and Latina women. So often, the dark-skinned women must go to lower-tier, seedier clubs where conditions are less desirable. And for the dark-skinned women who get hired at desirable clubs like the one I went to on my birthday, they have to battle for more opportunities and tips with light-skinned dancers, the same way black women in general must navigate stripping at the white clubs. And on a deeper level, dark-skinned strippers who compete against lighter-skinned strippers are reflective of disadvantaged people of any occupation competing with advantaged people who have more resources, opportunities, and social capital. Siobhan Brooks wrote, "Racism against black women in this industry is usually viewed as normal because like other appearance-based industries such as modeling or acting, the sex industry is based on ideas of customer taste and preference." She continues, "Thus, if black women are not desirable, it is the objective result of customer taste within a free market, not structural anti-black racism operating within the psyche of the customer or club management." So just like every other corner of society where dark-skinned black women are told their devaluing is just the result of preference, from Hollywood to hip-hop videos and lyrics to dating, the roots of colorism and white supremacy and slavery are ignored. Blatant colorism is excused as just going with the market. Because of the reality of colorism and racism in strip clubs, dancers who want to maximize their earnings and secure that bag have to go to the so-called right clubs. But more on that in a second. I would have absolutely hated to have been a stripper back in the day. Like, it seems fun now. Like, it seems, like, more fun than it at any point in history. Be sure to check out that miniseries episode. But, like, I would have hated to be one back in the day because there was more privacy. Sure, that's great. Meaning women like the fictional character Diamond in the Players Club could hustle for a while and seek into mainstream work without pictures of their booty holes flying around the internet. But the reason it would have sucked, in addition to less social acceptance compared to today, is the lack of visibility and support networks, especially for marginalized dancers outside of the most frequently requested skin color and body types. In the present day, thanks to the internet and social media, dancers can build up networks with other dancers, get resources and knowledge like where to go for certain body types, and, you know, have like a sense of camaraderie. And it was because of this network of strippers that I was able to go and like verify things that I was presenting in this episode. Like, I was able to just go to like strippers pages and to stripper chat rooms. Well, not stripper chat rooms, but like stripper forum boards, and to see, you know, people talking about these issues and verifying everything that I'm talking about. Like, they're documenting themselves and documenting their history online in addition to helping each other out. And I think it's really cool that dancers who 20 years ago couldn't have headlined at popular clubs can now build their own fan bases outside of clubs by utilizing the internet. Wrote Kevin Nodell in an article entitled Exotic Dancing in the Digital Age, with pages on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, strippers can advertise their dance schedules, telling fans and regulars which venues they'll be performing at and when, as well as make themselves available for private bookings. This technological advantage is important for sex workers in general in battling discrimination within their respective industries. So while in the last episode of Lex Rated, the internet presents a distinct danger for the lives of sex workers and non-sex workers alike via deepfake technology and revenge porn, in this episode, technology provides an opportunity to level the playing field for marginalized sex workers. Thanks for listening to this episode of Lex Rated. Attached to this episode are a list of essays and articles that you may be interested in. Be sure to tell me what you think. Let's chat. Have you seen or experienced racism or colorism in the strip club? Have a question about sex work you want me to address in a future episode? Drop it in the comments. Don't be shy, boo.